See, we're doing something a little bit different today. I want to share a dream with you. It's a dream. It could be a reality. As of now, it's not. So let's dream together. What are some of the problems that our community is facing nowadays? Yeah. Keep going.
Pornography.
Materialism.
Slow down. Sad that it comes so quickly, no? Intermarriage. Porn. Materialism.
Assimilation.
Yeah.
Need more room on the floor.
I heard centrality of
lack of centrality.
Education.
Lack of centrality.
Axel Rob DJ.
Racism.
Keep going. What?
Florida.
Jokes are good, but these are real problems.
War.
Let's keep going. Yeah.
That's
true.
What?
Nathan.
Not enough people
were
there.
Division.
What? Now it's off. Thinking of Lane was the end of Philo. People living outside of marriage is wrong. And every person here. Except for some. Keeping all of them.
Okay, are we running out? We're running out, that's it?
Lesnar.
Hutzbach.
I love it.
Spiyaski.
Okay, where are we at? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25. 25 in the span of? It's been 4 minutes, right? That's not great. That's not great at all. We got a lot of good ones. There are a lot of important ones here. I think we missed the biggest one. But we'll come back to that. Parsha Shkalim is this week. It's introduced with the line, Ki sisa es rosh b'nei Yisrael, lifkudehem. Everybody gives a machatzis as a shekel, used for the adonim. In future years it'll be used for the communal sacrifices. Great. What does it mean to be sisa es rosh b'nei Yisrael? To pick up the heads of Klal Yisrael. It's a strange phrase. We know that it means count, so we don't think about it. But what does it mean to pick up the heads? What is the significance of the word lifkudehem? What does the word pakad even mean? We know that it means counting, so like let's just get on. Let's get to the egel already, the exciting part. But what is that word, lifkudehem? It's kind of strange. Why the age of 20? Right, most mitzvos start at the age of 13. The Monah mitzvos count Nisinas Hashkalim as a mitzvah. Why is it limited to 20-year-olds? Focus. Good. Why is the Torah presented as from the age of 20 and on? And the strangest thing, it's so dafka. Half a shekel, not more, not less. If you try to give more, we will say no. We will throw it back at you like the people on the way down to the Kotel. If you give them too little, throw it back in your face. We couldn't say, give me a round number? A whole shekel? Why dafka a half? One last thing. For most mitzvos, almost all mitzvos, a couple of exceptions, the limit for the amount of money that you have to spend is... No. Chomesh, a fifth. Third for Heder Mitzvah, a fifth. Fifth of your Nechassim. What about here? If you have a guy who has 2 shekels, what? Chayiv. He has 1 shekel. Chayiv, Pater? Chayiv. He has half a shekel. Chayiv. He has no shekel. He has to sell the shirt off his back to get money to give a machasis a shekel. That is shocking. What are the other mitzvahs where we have that? Tefillin? I don't think so. Hanukkah, we have it. Dalai Kosos, we have it. Good? I don't think so. It is a very, very select group of mitzvahs where that then applies. So what is going on? What is so important that every single person, from the poorest of the poor to the richest of the rich, need to give half a shekel? Sir Rav Hirsch has an incredible, incredible read of this entire parsha. Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu that it was time to make the people who left Egypt into Klal Yisrael, into a Klal, a united group of community. How do you make a community? It's not just you're spending a lot of time in the same Dalet Amos, that doesn't work. How do you make a community? The answer, Hirsch says, is by contributing. Every person takes what he has and he gives to the cloud. A community is not something that I get to enjoy what they give me, but it's something that I contribute. I become part of it by giving. That's a powerful idea. The Machatzis HaShekel is a symbolic opportunity for every single member of Klal Yisrael to say, I want in. This is the community that I want to be a part of. And the way they got to demonstrate that was by giving. Okay, powerful. That's great. Everybody needs to be involved. The poorest of the poor. If he wants to be part of the Tzibor, if he wants to be part of the community, he's got to give. He's got to sell the shirt off his back. No exceptions. Okay. So I could stop here. And we could talk about how everybody should volunteer to clean the cholent pots. If we ever find them or get them back. We should help people who ask for favors in the WhatsApp groups. We should do our Torah Nut. We should do our Shmirah. But if I could quote Buzz Lightyear, we're not aiming for the truck. So let's keep going. Reverse continues. How much exactly was given in this Machatzis HaShekel? What do you mean? It's Machatzis HaShekel, right? You're saying the total? Each person. How much did each person have to give? Torah tells us. Esrim Geira HaShekel. So Machatzis HaShekel, 10 Geira. Now the number 10 is interesting. The symbolism of the number 10 would denote, what would you say?
Completion.
Shleimus. Basar ma'amaraz nivra ha'olam. The world came into being with 10 utterances, it's a Jewish word, speeches of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, 10 dibros, 10 fingers, yeah, okay. Shleimus. So we have a machatzis, we have a half of a shekel, not a whole shekel, but a half of a shekel, yet at the same exact moment, you're giving 10 geira. You're giving something which denotes shleimus. So how did those two ideas work together? It's a fascinating synthesis. On the one hand, Rehersh says, every single person who wants to be part of this community that we're all joining together, they need to recognize that no individual stands on their own. No one person can claim responsibility for an entire community. You guys exist because of me. Every person is a machatzis. Every person is completed by the other guys who are contributing to the community. At the same time, that doesn't give me rishus to slack off and just assume somebody else is going to pick up the slack. It's a machatzis. It's part of what's being built here. I need everybody else to complete me. But I need to give 10 geira. I need to give it my all. Lo alecha hamlacha ligmor. You can't do it all on your own. Velo ata. You guys are awesome. Great! Another powerful idea. Again, we could stop here. Every individual needs to contribute b'chol kocho, while at the same time holding in the head, I got to recognize the contributions of the other members of the group. To be honest, that's not always so simple. I'll tell you a story. When I was a camper in Camp Yagilu, so we ran my first ever 10-day hike. These are all the best stories, right? In the middle of the woods, who knows what's going to happen. First ever 10-day hike. On day 7, the night of day six, the conscience get us together and say, guys, till now we've been leading the hike. From day 7 on, 7, 8, 9, and 10, you guys are going to be in charge. Preparation for the big survival week that's going to be starting when you get back to camp. You guys are going to be taking care of everything on your own. This is your first opportunity to really take charge. Sounds kind of scary, but okay, we can pull this together. It did not help that the entire day 6 was a Shabbos where it had rained all day, torrential downpours. All of our stuff was in shambles, stuff was scattered all over the campsite, it was terrible. So we got a very, very late start on day 7, Sunday morning, so we had to clean up and pack up. There was no leadership, it was a big mess. Eventually, by the time we got started, it was around like noon, which is not when you want to start hiking, and it happened to be the longest hike of the trip. Rough times. So over the course of the day, I started taking on more of a leadership role. Again, I was a camper, so I started taking on more of a leadership role in this group, urging people on, getting people together, short lunches, let's go, keep things going. We ended up getting to the campsite around 2 o'clock in the morning. Not so fun. There's a thing called a lean-to, which is probably the most comfort you could expect when you're on a hike. So we were all looking forward to getting to this lean-to at the place we were supposed to be going to. Again, it's 2 o'clock, we're all exhausted, we want to just plots already. We get there, Occupado. Already taken, already occupied. You cannot reserve these things in advance. It was already taken. We were all very upset. So we move across and start trying to build a fire. Wet wood, not easy, but these malachim, tzaddikim, whoever happened to be in the lean-to, they saw. And we were coming, a big group of guys, cold, wet, tired. They actually volunteered to switch with us as long as we made them their fire. Really, really, really nice. So we had a nice place to sleep. And the next day was a much, much easier. And I continued in this role of trying to move guys along, this leadership role with me and my friends, the campers. Over time, we kind of fell into a rhythm. People had their roles. I was the leader. Some guys were cooks. Some guys were the tent, the shelter builders for when we needed that. Everybody kind of picked up their thing. The ninth night, the last night they were out on the trail, I was kind of running around from group to group, making sure the tent guys were doing their thing, the cooks were doing their thing, everybody was taking care of what needed to be taken care of. And I saw one of the guys was coming back with a huge armload of wood. We needed the wood for cooking, we needed the wood for our fire to keep warm. I said, thank you very much, really appreciate that. Gathering wood is the worst job, the most thankless job, it's the hardest job. He was doing a fantastic job, so we gave him a big thank you. Later on, while we were eating, I realized he really doesn't get much appreciation. It's really hard. He's schlepping all this stuff. He's not always working with somebody else. So I wanted to give him a shout out in the group. While we were all eating, I said, I just wanted to thank Mendy. His name is Mendy. I want to thank Mendy for all these nights we've been going out getting all the wood for our fires. So difficult, whatever. And he got this standing ovation. The guys really appreciated it. He was glowing. He really appreciated it. It was very, very nice. And I found myself a little upset. Like, where is my standing ovation? He just collected wood. And I'm the guy who's running around making sure this is happening, making sure that's happening, making sure we have food, making sure we're not wasting all of our time at rest stops. Who's giving me a standing ovation? So to balance these two ideas, the Machatzis HaShekel, recognizing that no one can do it on their own, they need to be completed by everybody else, while at the same time, I have my role, I'm going to give it my all. It doesn't matter if I'm getting that applause. It's not up to me, it's not what I'm there for. My job is to contribute, my job is to build that community, and to appreciate everybody around me. That's my task, that's my responsibility. Not easy, but that's what we got to do. Okay, again, so we could stop here. We could talk about the importance of recognizing how much everyone around you contributes to your year. You being in the base is not just about the learning that you're going to do, the tefillah that you're going to have, but it's about the learning the guy next to you is going to have because you're there. It's the tefillah that the guy next to you is going to have because you're there. A sense of contributing to the tzibur and the impact that you have on everybody else. But again, we're not aiming for the truck. So let's keep going. Now the next step, it's almost too audacious, too bombastic, too grandiose to even imagine. Like I said, it's a dream. It's a figment of an imagination. But let's paint a picture. Let's paint a picture. Let's see if anything can happen. Now the project that Moshe Rabbeinu called on Klal Yisrael to donate to, that was the Mishkan. The vision that he laid out was also grandiose, was also bombastic. Metalwork, weavery, embroidery, golden garments, tafash, tapestries. There was a huge problem though. Who was doing all this work? Who is spinning the hair off the goats to make those goat hair curtains? I'll tell you who doesn't know how to do it. A nation of slaves who have been working with bricks for the past 400 years. Who's doing this stuff? Has Klal Yisrael ever been exposed to metalwork? To craftsmanship where you got to take a block of gold, you hammer it down till it's a thread, and then you weave it in among wool and linen together? They don't know how to do this. They've never seen this. They never learned this. Who's doing this work? So the Torah in Vayakel gives us the answer. The workers were the ones whose hearts lifted them up. They were inspired to contribute not just money, but their time. They came to Moshe and said, "We're in. We don't know how to do it, but I feel like I can work with gold. I feel that I can do the embroidery. I feel that I have this innate connection, this innate skill for it, this talent. I'll figure out the carpentry." Each person, the Ramban describes, each person came and said, "This is what I feel like I can do. I never learned it, but I'm going to try. I'm going to figure it out." And you know what? They succeeded. They crafted the Mishkan. That's an incredible accomplishment for a group of slaves that had never hammered a single golden thread, woven a single me'il. They cared. They came. They accomplished. They did it. Now, what's our Mishkan? Somebody once asked Rav Nevinson, "Why don't we just go across the valley and start building the base of Mikdash right now? Like, what's stopping us?" And Rav Nevinson smiled at him, said, "You go first. It's not something we can do right now. So what's our Mishkan? What's the project? Let's say I read Parsha Shkolim. I'm super inspired. I want to take out my wallet. I want to give. I want to get involved. What am I supposed to build? What do I contribute to? How can I give my metaphorical matzus hashekel, my 10 geira? So what if I told you that our Mishkan is the world? What if I told you that the adonim, those sockets, that the matzus hashekel was melted down to make, symbolizes olam hazeh? You can look in the Netziv, it'll blow your mind. What does that mean? Our Mishkan is the world. What does it mean for it to build the world? For each person to donate half a shekel for the sake of building up the world? So let's look at our board. The Jewish world is broken up into how many different pieces? Should we guess? The modern Orthodox, look at a Shidduch resume, let's say it that way. There's YU Machmir. Why you machmir, but like extra machmir? Then there's open orthodoxy, and then there's yeshivish. And I'm sure I'm not holding, but I'm sure yeshivish has its own brands. That are Ravan or the Ravan Lyansky is like his brand of yeshivish, open yeshivish. And then there's the other brands of not as open yeshivish, still good but not different. Open orthodoxy, I'm sure they have there. We got a lot of divisions. How are we bridging those gaps? I don't know. Intermarriage. You guys know the stats on intermarriage according to Pew, the most recent Pew study, 2020, 2021. 70%. 70% of non-Orthodox, maybe you're right about overall, but 70% of non-Orthodox Jews are intermarried. It's kind of scary. We know the CS issues, we know the porn issues, and materialism. Hey, anybody got any numbers on materialism?
Too many.
That was good. Let's think education. Why did we all come into HaKotel? Barely able to read a Gemara, no basic knowledge in Tanakh, Mishnayos, but we could name stats for most baseball players going back 10 years. We can name each of the 6 Star Wars movies, but we can't name the 6 Sidrei Mishnah. I can tell you the intricacies of offsides or the infield fly rule, but I can't tell you the 5 rules of Achzara on Shabbos. Didn't we all spend 12 years in the day school system? Were they teaching us A or B? Which one were they focusing on? How did that happen? We don't have this on the board, right? You guys know how much tuition costs nowadays? Do you know the numbers? Let's say you have 5 kids and you're in the tri-state area. How much do you need to make before taxes just to pay for education? Yeah, we have a parent in the room, maybe you can. How much? Do we have numbers? A little bit more. 100, okay, around 120. Depends on the school, depends on, around $120,000 before taxes without paying for like groceries and a car and your mortgage. If that doesn't scare you, you guys know the Jordan Lovitz mikvah story? Yeah. So if that doesn't scare you, your head is deeper in the sand than Jordan's head is in the mikvah. The Shidduch crisis is called a crisis for a reason, and it affects our community also. Anti-Semitism for the year 2021 is the worst it's been in a decade. In Europe, 10 attacks a day. In Europe, 10 attacks a day, on average. What are we doing with the LGBTQ community? People who are attracted to others of the same gender? They can still be part of our community. They can still make significant contributions to our community if we can figure out a way to keep them in, to give them space to be in, while at the same time upholding the Torah's model of what marriage is meant to look like and family life is meant to look like. How do we do that? We still haven't figured it out. That's a big problem. People going off the derech, leaving the Orthodox community. What are the numbers for that? Also from Pew, 33% of people raised Orthodox don't identify as Orthodox as adults. And the commenters on the survey, they took a relatively small sample size, and they thought that it was more in the ultra-Orthodox community. So if those numbers are true for the ultra-Orthodox community, Alach's comment, the comma. You guys, Horan, I think, has been speaking about his experiences in Maryland, right? He was at Maryland for a Shabbos. Josh Lehman, one of the Kotel alumni, the rabbi there. 600 people, young adults, who went through the day school system, right? We're not talking about all Jews. People who went through the day school system, normal schools. 600 people, men and women, at Maryland. How many people came to Friday night davening? 110, 120. So already we're at a fifth, a sixth of the people there. Again, day school system, not all Jews, Reform, Conservative, Orthodox. Of the people who went through the day school system. And then, how many people came to Shacharis on Shabbos? 50, around 50. So 50 out of 600 people who either went straight to college or spent a year in some yeshiva, relatively mainstream yeshivos, spent a year. So 50 out of those 600, that doesn't sound like 33%, right? How many of those? How many of the other 550 are keeping Shabbos? I would venture a guess, a relatively small number, no? And why are these people at Maryland as opposed to other colleges? Presumably because they wanted the Jewish community, no? That's why people go to Maryland. So of the people who at least had a Hava Amina, that they do want to be part of the community, they chose the place which would give them some sense of Jewish community, and they went through the day school system, they're already checked out. 50 are coming to davening on Shabbos. 550 are just not showing up. Sounds kind of scary. And then we have this entire board. What did we say we had here? 25, 30, whatever the numbers were. There are a lot of problems. But like I said, I think we missed the biggest problem. I think the biggest problem that we have we have 60 people in the room right now. What are the chances that the same way as a normal musser, I could finish right now and we'd all come over and say, oh, I'm just not going to fire this. And then we'd walk out of the room and that would be it. We would sing our Friday night song, we'd have a nice Shabbos together, and then we'd just move on with life. These problems don't go away. They get worse. they'll continue. So apathy means we see problems and we're not moved to do anything about them. If we weren't apathetic, we wouldn't have these problems, or we'd at least be working on them. Von Lichtenstein has an incredible, incredible essay. It's almost a shame to speak it out, because I don't want to ruin it for you all to read it inside. But just to give you a sense of what he says. He's talking about Megillas Esther. He asks, if you look at Esther at the beginning of the Megillah and Esther at the end of the Megillah, you're almost looking at two different people. Esther in the beginning is entirely passive. There is almost nothing that she does on her own. Mordechai tells her what to do, and almost that was by design, right? Whatever Mordechai did, the same way that was what she did when she was in Mordechai's house, that's what she continued to do when she was in Ahasuerus' palace. She doesn't make decisions on her own. At the end of the Megillah, Esther is actually the mover and shaker. She actually overshadows Mordechai. She becomes the one who's going to the king, engineering these parties and plots and setting it up so that Haman takes the fall while Ahasuerus is there. She brings Mordechai before Ahasuerus. They take over Haman's estate. Chazal say that she sent a letter to the Chachamim, Kisvuni Lidoros, write my story down for all generations. This is not the same meek Esther that we started the Megillah with. So if Aaron asks, what happened to Esther? The turning point, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein says, is in the middle of the Megillah, right after the Gezerah is publicized, is sent out. Shushan is fasting. Shushan is crying out. Mordechai is dressed in sackcloth. And Esther hasn't done anything. But she hears that her uncle Mordechai, her husband Mordechai, is wearing these funny clothes. She's like, Mordechai, what are you doing? I'm going to send you clothes. Clearly you ran out of laundry or something. I'm going to send you clothes. Please change your clothes. You're making me uncomfortable. And that's obviously not the response that we're looking for. Mordechai sends back, here's what's going on. Maybe you didn't hear. Here's the copy of the Gezerah. This is what's about to happen. Mordechai says the entire nation of Israel, young and old, is in danger. Everyone, this is the hour. Go and do something in your position as wife in the royal palace. Shout, appeal, beg, pray. All around, swords are being sharpened, ammunition is being stockpiled, but Esther remains unmoved. She tells Mordechai, what do you want me to do? The rules of the palace is I can't go before the king unless he's called me. And it's already been 30 days. I'm sorry, but I cannot help you. The entire nation of Israel stands on one side of the scale. She stands alone on the other. What decides the issue? Her own problems. Now Mordechai sends her a message. Rav Aaron says, I myself tremble anew each time I read this verse. And Mordechai said in reply to Esther, do not imagine that you will escape in the king's palace from among all the Jews. Now let's read into that statement. How is Mordechai reading Esther's refusal? It's not that I can't do anything. I think I'm fine. I'm safe. I'm here in the palace. You guys will be killed. You guys will burn. But I'm okay. And Mordechai says, no, you're not. Ouch. That's what he thinks of Esther? That she thinks she's okay, so she's not interested in getting involved? He accuses Esther of refusing to go to the king. Not because she lacks courage, not out of weakness, but as a calculated choice. Let the entire Jewish nation be destroyed. Let them all perish, young and old. Men and women, I will remain secure in the royal palace. This is how Mordechai interprets her response, and this is what he addresses. Not weakness, not a lack of courage, but rather what he fears may lie behind everything. Behind the apparent timidity lies apathy. Someone who really cares. Someone whose consciousness is deeply rooted in the collective experience of Klal Yisrael. Disregards any consideration of danger or possible anger on the part of the king. In fact, such a person does not even have to suppress these thoughts. They don't even enter his mind. Such considerations arise, whether consciously or subconsciously, out of a perception that everyone else may perish, but I will save my own skin. If we think we're fine, these problems won't bother us. We can afford to be apathetic, because they're not our problems. They're other people's problems. I'm not going up to Derech now. I'm not assimilating now. What's the issue? I'm not going to intermarry. I'll figure out the 120,000. I'll go into Sai Sims. I'll do business. That was a joke. It's okay. And Mordechai adds, if you remain silent at this time, Revach v'hatzolah, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from elsewhere. V'at u'beis avich tovedu. This is the role that God set for you, and if you ignore it, that's the end of your time on the stage. You missed your chance, you're out. Do you believe that everyone will perish and you will remain there in the royal palace just because you have succeeded in entering the king's bedroom? Is that how you think God runs his world? Someone who avoids any responsibility, who doesn't care, who isn't prepared to risk herself, who sets her personal ambitions over the interests of the nation, is that the person you think will survive? Will all values just disappear? And you and your father's house will perish. This is the turning point. This is where Esther says, Mordechai, you're right. You're right. She has to look deep. She can't deceive herself, she can't deceive Mordechai, she can't deceive HaKadosh Baruch Hu. She needs to answer the question, do I care, do I not? Am I part of this seabor, am I on my own? She sees the apathy, she needs to address the apathy, she needs to decide. It is now that the young, passive, powerless Esther faces her moment of truth and she prevails. She passes the test. It is now that she rises to her full stature. She reveals herself, not just in title, but in essence, as a queen. And suddenly the Esther who said, there's nothing that I can do, she comes up with a plan. Not only one plan, she has two plans. Lech Knosis Kol HaYehudim. First of all, get the tzibur together. Daven, cry out, fast. That's what you need to do. I'm going to prepare myself. I'll be fasting for 3 days. My maidens will be fasting for 3 days. And then I'm getting dressed up and I'm going to the king. I thought you said it wasn't allowed. It doesn't matter. I'm going anyway. Suddenly the Esther, who saw no recourse, is coming up with ideas, is coming up with answers. And we know she was successful. That was Esther's redemption then. Rav Aaron says, the same applies to us today. We are all, to some degree, Esther. Each of us, for whatever reason, has doubts as to his or her abilities. We too are hesitant. What, I'm going to achieve all that? I'm going to save Am Yisrael? I'm going to put a stop to assimilation? I'm just a youngster. I can achieve only a little bit in my neighborhood, a little bit with my youth group, a little bit in the family, but to start a revolution? To determine the future of a nation? Little me? Here comes the demand. I'm not going to use Mordechai's words, but I do want to at least pose the question. This is all Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. How much of our resignation is motivated by supposed inability, and how much is a result of the fact that our concern simply doesn't run deep enough? The apathy. Esther had to decide. We have to decide. Where does it come from? Why aren't we getting up? Why are we still sitting here? Why are these problems still on the board? Herein lies the ultimate question. It's directed to each and every one of us. Let each person do as Esther did. Stand before himself, stand before God. And once the situation is quite clear to him, ask himself, where do I stand? Who am I? What comes first? And what is secondary? If you understand the situation and there's no reason or excuse not to, then you hear the cry that emanates from every part of the country, from every corner of the globe, expressed in the spiritual dangers surrounding and threatening us on every side. Someone who cares knows what's going on. And once he knows, he must ask himself, what significance does this knowledge have for me? To what extent does it cause me pain? To what extent do I identify with world Jewry and fasting and prayer? To what extent is my spiritual world structured such that Knesset Yisrael and its dangers are on one side, and I, with my considerations and private needs, am on the other? Which side do we choose? Like Esther, we will all have to ask ourselves the question when the time comes. We could have saved. Did we? What will our answer be then? What is our answer today? The problem of apathy, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein sees as the central core of the Megillah. Kisvuni Lidoros. Esther says to the Chachamim, write this story down. This is not about me. This is about every single individual in Klal Yisrael. We will always have problems. But everybody needs to know that it's their job to take what they have and take that machatzis ha-shekel and give it back to the tzibur. To choose one of the problems on the board and say, that one's mine. That's the one that I'm going to take on. The question is, do we feel that way? Is it the apathy? Or can we generate the opposite of that apathy? Can we get involved? I think most of us feel like we would love to change them. We would love to be involved, but we just can't. They're too big. They're too hard. We can't change them. So we ignore them. And I'll be honest, often that same sense of apathy, that same, I can't do it, it's too hard, it leads people to check out of Judaism. What does it do for me in the end? What does it have to do with me? If Judaism doesn't ask anything of me, then why should I be involved? I never had the opportunity to give anything to this community. Nobody ever asked anything of me, so why should I stay? And I'll be honest, the feeling that I have when we lose guys, and we've lost guys over the past bunch of years. I was a Talmud here 10 years ago, is that what it was? So I was here as a Talmud for 3 years, I was back in NYU, and I saw guys, alumni coming in for the 4 years after that, and I've been back here for 3 years teaching. Fourth. And we have had guys who have come through the system who had incredible potential. There's a guy here a number of years ago. Hilarious. Incredible writer. Thoughtful. Already when he was in yeshiva, he was putting out high-level content. Stuff that was being published. Good stuff. After a couple of years in YU, go on, not for him. My feeling when I see that, and this is almost selfish of me, is we've lost somebody that I wanted him on my team. Like dodgeball during color war, there's that guy who's just really good, and you're upset when he's not on your team. I wanted him on my team because I know how good he is. I know what he could have done for the team, and we lost him. That bothers me. And that goes both ways. That's not only for the guys who check out. That's not only for the guys who slide to the left. That's true, sadly, for the guys who slide to the right also. A friend of mine from high school. We learned together. We accomplished things together in high school. That's not common. Went to a different yeshiva. And he's been learning in the mirror for the past 8-9 years. That's a beautiful thing. That's a wonderful thing. Talmud Torah is fantastic. But he could have done so much with his other talents, the things that he could have brought to the klal. And we lost that. And that bothers me. I appreciate the fact that he's learning. I think that's great for him. But I think he could have done so much more. The unique talents that he had, the way that we worked together, I think we could have done an incredible amount. And I don't see that happening in the near future. That upsets me. That bothers me. There are so many guys who could have done so much to address these issues if they were in, if they stayed in the game, if they were on our team. But we lose them. Why do we lose them? Because they don't feel like they're in. They never felt like these problems were asking for them to take them on. They had their machatzis ha-shekel, they had what to give, but nobody ever asked them to give it. We actually have seen that this does work, though. To challenge somebody and say, we have problems. Can you take what you have and apply that to these problems? Rabbi Yochanan, Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan is bathing in the river. Reish Lakish, the head of the bandits, he used to be a huge Talmid Chacham, but we lost him from the game, right? He was the head of the gladiators, I think, according to Steinsaltz. He jumped over the river. Rabbi Yochanan sees him, shocked. Chel chal de oraisa. Your power, your koach. We need that for Torah. And Reish Lakish was interested. You mean there's a place for me? You mean that I could take my koach and do something meaningful with it? Tell me more. Rabbi Yochanan told him about what was his sister, and he was in. Solved two problems at once, the Shidduch crisis and the apathy crisis. If you can show people that their talents have a place to be used, that we have a demand for them, we have a need for them, that their machatz as a shekel has a meaningful place in the community, they'll be in. They'll stay in. Not only will they stay in, these problems can start coming off the board. And even if you wanted to leave, this doesn't solve all the problems, right? This doesn't prove God. This doesn't solve all the other issues that we have in our community. But, you know what? How could I leave? Even with all those other problems. If this is my issue, and I'm the one who can actually move that needle, make a dent in that problem, even with all the other issues, how can I leave? They need me. I'm the closer for the team. If I walk away, who's going to do it? I'm the big man. They don't have another one. When I was in high school, we had a guy who was a guy from Denver. He's like 6'2", 6'3". In Jewish terms, that's huge. So he was the center for our team, obviously. The next tallest guy was me. And he actually got injured at some point in sophomore year or something. And it's a joke, but I was the center. It was a big problem. It didn't go well. We didn't win a single, like... If you have a real role to play, you will do whatever you need to stay, to contribute, to fill that need. Granted, there will be other problems. Granted, not everything's going to be okay, but you feel needed. You feel like your shekel has a place. You'll stay. We'll have you. You'll stay on the team. That's what we need. Now, I'll be honest. For the guys in yeshiva, this may not be the time to invest in this project. It doesn't help Klal Yisrael to have a bunch of Amoratim running around trying to save the world. I'll be honest. Solutions do need to come from a place of recognizing real, authentic Jewish values, and that's meant to come through our morning Seder, afternoon Seder, the night Seder, the Rishus Sedarim. If you don't see the connection between the Torah we learn, especially the Yin we learn, and the Jewish values we're supposed to be bringing out into the world, please let's have a conversation. But we do need to have that time. Honestly, most guys also haven't figured out exactly what area is going to be their niche. Where can they make that impact? Where are they going to make a difference? If I asked you, what's your major in college? Most of you are not going to know. Similar points. Most of that comes later. For those of you who do know, we do have Baina's Mom coming up. In just a few months, it'll be the summer. The Men Shana Bet guys will be in college. Guys who are listening on Zoom, you're already in college. I know how difficult college can be. I know what it feels like to have a midterm, a final, a project, and a date all hanging on your head for a single weekend, and you have no idea how all four of those things are going to get done. The struggle is real. Time is not open to you in college. And yet, back to Rav Hirsch. He points out that what age did we start collecting these shtolim? When did we start making these demands on the tzibur? We didn't go out to the teenagers hanging out at the pizza shop and say, you guys aren't doing anything anyway. Why don't you come save the world? That's not who we spoke to. Mi ben esrim shana v'mala. It's the 20-year-olds. It's the ones who do have other responsibilities. They're getting married. They're getting jobs. They have to get food out. They have to put food on the table. They're the ones that we go to and say, machatzas hashekel, we need it now. So yeah, it's going to take time. Yet, it's going to be hard. Does this mean we're reshuffling our priorities? Yeah, probably it does. But if we really believe in this idea of the Machatzis HaShekel, if we really want to conquer this apathy, that's the time. That's the time to really start making a dent. Once you're in college, you're learning skills. You're building towards a degree. You're going to be cultivating something valuable. You'll be making money, right? Hopefully. You're cultivating something valuable in an area that you're hopefully interested in. Take that. Look at the list of problems that we have. This is 25. We have another 55 or so. If none of these spoke to you, figure out what's your niche going to be. And again, not one person is not going to solve anti-Semitism. You know what one person can do? Any soldiers here? Got Yona? Anybody else? Real soldiers. Tzahal soldiers. You learn Krav Maga?
Yeah.
So what happens if Yona comes back and teaches five guys Krav Maga? And then those five guys go back to America and they each teach five students. They each teach five friends. Now we have 25 people trained from a chayal who actually know how to defend themselves. And those five guys start offering classes. Or the original five guys teach another five guys. That hasn't solved anti-Semitism, but it's protected a lot of people. One person is not going to solve one of the big problems on the board. What you can do is you can sit, you can think, come up with one small slice. We're trying to move the needle on each one of these issues. That you can do. That you can accomplish. That is doable. So over Shabbos, we're going to try to continue bringing this min hakoach el hapoal. We're going to try to bring this into reality. At the Tish, at Kiddush, we're going to take a couple of the broader categories that we set out before. Family, education, halacha, Torah, lifestyle issues. And we're going to try to discuss as a group, come up with some of these ideas. Right, we're not going to conquer anti-Semitism, but we could teach Krav Maga. We're not going to solve the tuition crisis, but we can give lessons in financial literacy to new couples. Come up with these sort of ideas that every single person can find one and say, this is going to be my project. This is the one that I'm going to do. The ideas should be relatively short range, maxing out in about 2 months in scope from beginning to end. 2 months, a clear measure of success. What does it mean that we moved the needle on this? The more involved with actual people, the better. We're not just putting out content, putting out Divrei Torah, putting out ideas. We're actually working with real people. Let's take one of the entries on a different list is the fact that people don't sing Zmiros at their Shabbos table. Now that sounds like a relatively small issue, but think about it. What did your Shabbos feel like? How inspiring was your Shabbos? How meaningful was your Shabbos? And if your family actually sat and sang together, and let's say you even thought about the content of the Zmiros, it's almost unthinkable. How much would that have changed your experience of what a Shabbos looked like, what your week felt like? That's a great example of a small, small point, but can have a significant impact on a family. So what do we do about that? So level one, you make a recording of yourself singing a Zemer. You teach, trying to teach somebody the tune, maybe that's the problem, and you just put it out there. Put it on YouTube, send out the link to a few friends. That's level one. What's level two? Reach out to the Y-Studs, reach out to the Maccabees. You get some name recognition in there, maybe some other names. Morty Shapiro, I think some guys go to the Shapiro Minion, you can get them involved. And you put out videos together with them. Okay, more people are going to hear it now. You've got a big name involved. That's level two. What's level three? One guy who knows how to play guitar goes to an elementary school and plays Zmiros for half an hour before Shabbos with the kids. You're actually interacting with real people. They'll go home and say, I did this cool thing. doing this cool thing at school. Can I teach you a new song? Can we sing that song that I really like from the Friday assembly, from the Friday thing in school? Okay, cool. Level 3, and that's one guy with a guitar and a connection to a school. What's level 4? Well, you guys know what caroling is? Christmas caroling? Yeah, I've never experienced this personally. But people just going around singing songs outside of houses. So what if we did Zemmering? Sounds like a joke. But if you had a high school, full of guys, DRS, goes out on a Friday night. And then they go to their neighbors, 3-4 guys at a time. They go to their neighbors, they knock on the door, and they just ring out a menucha v'simcha. How gishmak would that be? And the families would be learning the Zemiros. We're creating a culture. We sing Zemiros. Is that ever going to happen? I don't know. That one's like a little bit out there. We have level 1, level 2, level 3, and we can dream. Level 4. If you're not here, if you're not in for Shabbos, if you're not in Eretz Yisrael right now, I ask you, I encourage you to sit, think, take these categories, take these problems, talk it over with friends, literally, just ask them, what's the biggest problem Klai Yisrael is facing, our community is facing, what can we do about it? And come back with ideas. Send them in, send us emails, WhatsApp us. We need these ideas, even if you're not going to be the one to do it. The more ideas we have, the more we have to work with to actually get things done. Discuss it over Shabbos. Think about it over Shabbos. That's at the very least the first step. So now this is it. This is the speech. This is the part where everybody leaves and goes home. I can just imagine Moshe Rabbeinu, right? We said Moshe Rabbeinu presented the beginning of Parshas Vayakel. He gathers everyone together by Vayakel Moshe. He gives this big inspiring speech. Gold and silver. We need your copper and bronze. We need your wood. We need carpenters. We need embroiderers and weavers. All these incredible jobs that nobody knows how to do. We're going to build this Mishkan. The Pasuk says, everybody left after the speech. They all went home, went back to their tents. Can you imagine what Moshe was feeling? He just laid out this crazy plan. People were probably like elbowing each other as they walked. That for kind of work. I think a bunch of Jews are going to work together and build a home for God? No shot. The guy is dreaming. And Taka, you know what the pasuk says? Who came back? We don't know how many people came back to be involved. There were 600,000 plus people gathered for this assembly. More men, women. Vayavohu Kol ish asher nisa'o libo. Those who were inspired. Those who were raised up. Kisisas rosh asher nisa'o libo. Asher nisa'o libo. There's a connection there. Those who felt inspired, they came back. Was it 5? Was it 10? Was it 500? We have no idea. We laid out this crazy plan here. We have 25 problems on the board. We have 80 problems on a Word doc. 80 people here, 80 people listening, less. More than enough problems to go around. How many guys are coming back? How many guys are saying, I'm in, I'm one of those Kol Asher Nisa Olivo? So that's up to you. I can't do anything about that. I can give the speech. I can stand up there, laying out this picture, drawing the boundaries of this dream. But if we don't have those people coming back, the Vayavohu Kol Ish Asher Nisa'os Libo, then nothing's going to happen. So will we get 1? Will we get 2? 5? 10? Am I reaching if I say 20? Could it be more than that? It could be. It depends on you. And if not now, I understand. Could be Ben Azmanim. If it's not Ben Azmanim, let's say the summer. If it's not the summer, fine. Come back to us when you're in college. Mi Ben Azrim Shanav Amalad, that's the time. When you start figuring out what you have to offer, will get you that list. Choose one thing and get it done. Many times after I give Moser, guys come over, give me a shkoyach, they tell me how powerful it was. I'll pick up my phone, flames from the guys listening. And I'm not going to lie, I appreciate the support. It feels good. It's nice to hear when a message hits. I don't want that this time. Please don't send flames. Send ideas. Please don't give shkoyachs. Give time. Give energy. Shkoyach. Thank you.